It is the Nashville Soccer Show here on the 104.5 The Zone Podcast Network. Crew is all here as we recap the season, recap what was the worst penalty shootout that I have ever seen, probably that you've ever seen as well. Hopefully you didn't watch it, so you can allow us to recap it for you and saved yourself from the horror. Plus, we move forward into an MLS offseason, part two, and the guys are all here to recap it with you, Davey Shepherd, Ben Wright, Lucas Panzica, Will Bowling here with you as always. Gentlemen, it's been a minute as we wait for the awards to finish up. We wait for the offseason to begin, an earlier offseason than some of us expected. But now we totally dive in. Davey, I'll start with you. What's going on, man? Good to see you.
Good to see you guys. Always good to catch back up. And yeah, Nashville had everything in front of them in that game. Opportunities to win it in regulation, probably a handball that should have been called. I think, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, but Pro did come out and say, hey, that was a missed call, I almost said a word I'm not – well, maybe I am allowed to say it because this is on the radio. Yeah. But anyways, I'm not said going it. To. What okay. in the heck, instead of a different four-letter word there, they do that for? I do not know because – it's kind of just like salt in the wound. Like, hey, we missed the call, but I'm going to tell you that I missed the call. I just don't get it. I think it's very, very stupid. That being said, other chances too. I think it was a 2-1-1 and you don't get a shot on goal. That being said, Philly really, really, really poured on the chances late. I think Nashville was lucky to get it into extra time. And like you said, probably the worst shootout I've ever watched. So, Lucas, I know you are the shootout guy, and you really had to take some medicine there on that one, man.
Yeah, sorry to put that evil on Nashville SC. I was low-key rooting for a penalty shootout because it's my favorite thing in sports, but that's what you get in a penalty shootout. You just don't know, and you especially don't know with this team that in its MLS existence we had never seen in a penalty shootout. Look, Philly with Andre Blake, I think he's one of the best shot stoppers in MLS. They were clinical. Blake was fantastic. And it feels like a really big missed opportunity, right? Because I said before the game, I thought Union was the most favorable, or I'm sorry, that Union was the toughest matchup that Nashville had in front of it on its way to the MLS Cup final. I thought a matchup with NYCFC would have been a little favorable. And even whoever they met in the final possibly would have been a more favorable matchup than Philadelphia Union and the way they like to play in their structure. And it feels like a huge missed opportunity when you look at what happened afterwards with Union losing all its players going into that New York City game. That one obviously came down to the end, NYC with the late stoppage time win. Just feels like Nashville really could have benefited from being in that spot against NYCFC. So it's a tough pill to swallow for those guys, but that's what you get in a shootout. It's part of why you love it, part of why you hate it, part of what makes it the most thrilling thing that in the sports world, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think conceding that goal right before halftime just was a killer for Nashville, especially after they took the lead and looked really good for stretches. And it was just such a momentum shifter. And then in the penalty shootout, like you said, Andre Blake is just one of the best goalkeepers in MLS. He obviously saves the first two. And then it almost felt like Muil and Zimmerman were just trying to do too much. Like they knew he had saved the first two. And so they had to do something special to score. And they both missed. Nashville continues to struggle in shootouts in a frustrating way for the season to end, but I don't think you can. I think it's an unfortunate way to go out because I think the ending didn't really reflect what they had done for most of the season, and I think it's their 2021 season was impressive in a lot of ways.
When you look at all the advantages, the disadvantages of that specific matchup with Philadelphia, Ben, is it fair to say that Andre Blake in a penalty shootout was Philadelphia's biggest advantage over Nashville?
I think so. I don't know if you could say Philadelphia had a ton of advantages over right. Nashville, because I think they matched up really well. And I think we all knew going into it that it was going to be a pretty tight game. There weren't going to be a ton of chances. I think having a guy like him is a huge advantage. I think too, I mean, Hani Mukhtar has been so, so good for Nashville, but penalties are not one of his strengths. Mm-hmm. And so I think you kind of knew when he stepped up, I felt like how he did was kind of going to make it or break it for Nashville. And I think just digging yourself into a hole like that off the bat is a lot to overcome anyway. And I think it just proved to be too much for Nashville.
Lucas, I have to admit, my first thought when this penalty shootout began was watching how nervous you were in the Euro final for Italy and England. And my first thought was, if I feel this nervous for this, I cannot imagine how Lucas felt in a Euro final with Italy in this circumstance. I'm glad for you that you got one of the two teams to win, but I think I now know even more how you were nervous for that. And this is a team that we've all watched for a couple of years versus a team that you have watched for your entire life. So I just want to congratulate you again on winning a penalty shootout, because I can now at least sympathize a little bit with how stressful that must have been.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. Some of my best sports memories in my lifetime have come from penalty shootouts, often from Italy. When I think back to Euro 2012 against England with the Pirlo and the Panenka, and or in Italian, the Cucchiaio. It's just one of those things where I think it's the most tense thing in sports. But unfortunately for Nashville, this wasn't very tense for the majority of the shootout, because as you said, Ben, the Hani Mukhtar miss kind of set the tone. And then you knew it was over when Alex Moyle blasted outside the frame. It's just, again, it's one of those things that we have not seen Nashville involved in. And Nashville is the type of team that in the postseason, in its future, it's probably going to carry a few matches into penalty shootout if they continue with this foundation under Gary Smith and this structure, the way that they play, especially in the postseason. I'm going to say it's probably not the last penalty shootout that we see from Nashville in the MLS playoffs. Over the next few years, it's certainly a part of their game they're going to have to fix.
I mean, it kind of felt like it was coming, right? With drawing 18 matches in the regular season, and then it's kind of fitting that in the postseason, you just carry that form into a penalty shootout.
Yeah, you were close to do it against Orlando too.
I don't know if this was touched on while I stepped away, and for everybody out there, I apologize. I'm having mic issues, so I'm just on the laptop today. Will, did you get in the chance to say that I told you so? They were going to lose by a set piece goal. Did that happen while I was gone?
It did not, but I will now give you the floor. And allow me, this is kind of like the new way on Instagram where you can like co-post something. Let's just basically do this together, because even on the last show, I also said that this team is going to give up a set piece goal on the road, and they're not going to be able to come back from it. So I will now give you the floor to bask in our I told you so-ness.
Yeah, you know, look, you don't want to be right about these things, but it's the way that it goes every now and then. And look, I think maybe the guy who seemed the most perturbed by the whole thing was Walker Zimmerman post-game, saying, "I have no idea, basically, why this was a thing this year." Congrats to Walker, by the way, two-time defending MLS Defender of the Year in the MLS Best 11. Hani Mukhtar finishes second in MVP voting, also makes the Best 11. Incredible job. Just those guys are just insane values. If you look at their wages, what they were paid, we paid in the transfer in Nashville, it's outstanding work by Mike Jacobs and Gary Smith on those two. But yeah, guys, and then, hey, look, here's the thing. And Ben, we had an opportunity to sit down and talk a little bit earlier with Mike Jacobs and Ian Ayer. And I think one of the things that Mike mentioned was just getting into the playoffs, right? The idea that if you just give yourself a chance, and you saw that, you saw this game goes to penalties. And then in the very next game, New York City, who is as talented as anyone in the world, but really struggled for large portions of the season. Catches Philadelphia on a COVID nightmare, basically, which is such an unfortunate way to see a team go out of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Just really, really brutal. And I think if you haven't seen what Jim Curtin said post game, really worth a look. I think if you're a person who cares about sports and watches actively, which if you're listening to this, clearly you are, it's just really, I think, insightful kind of thought into a guy who's really trying to do the right thing, follow the protocols and all that, but it's really kind of hard done by them. And so just thought it was interesting.
So we're going to get into the roster moves coming up here in a minute with Ben and kind of the headlines coming out of that on who is back and who is not. But guys, I wanted to start here because soccer is unique in the fact that trophies abroad in Europe internationally are viewed differently than I think championships are in American sports. So what I mean by that is you bring a player like Hani Mukhtar over from Bromby. You bring in Ake Loba, Yonder Cadiz. There are so many different trophies that you are battling for within one season, even for the teams that aren't in Champions League and aren't in European competition, that it almost feels like a knockout tournament is secondary to what is the trophy which in Europe is winning at the end of the season and having the most points. How do we judge a season in MLS that is Americanized to really emphasize one tournament? Because I get the sense of this team and of New England specifically as well, that you judge over an entire season and say, look, you get into the randomness of a penalty shootout. It was more random for New England than it was Nashville, because New England actually, you know, looked competent in their penalty shootout. But how do you judge this team knowing that a knockout tournament can end in such a random way? How do you prioritize the one trophy over the entire season with how different this league is versus other leagues? And Ben, I'll start with you on this one.
I mean, I think around the world, like, you wouldn't knock it. Most teams, you wouldn't knock most teams for finishing third place over the course of the regular season, which is what Nashville did, tied on points for second place. And in any other league around the world, they would be in second place with their goal difference.
Right.
So I think that's important. I think, to context, just they're the second expansion team in MLS history to win a playoff game in both of their first two seasons. I think given the pretty low expectations just from a national perspective when they entered the league back in 2020, I think it's pretty remarkable to see just how they've overperformed that. And they're not just, they always, Mike Jacobs always talked about the goal being to not be able to tell who was the expansion team and who was the team that had been in MLS for X number of years. And I think they've kind of shattered that, right? They're now in the conversation for one of the better teams in the entire league, finished in third place. They're an MLS Cup contender. I think they're building kind of a new blueprint for the way expansion teams are going to do it in the future. And now they're heading into a brand new stadium with the core returning. And I think a lot of people are expecting them to be as good or better in 2023. So, I mean, I think that context of just how they've done as an expansion team is huge, and it's only going to get better. So I think it would be hard to say that this year was anything other than a success.
Yeah, the momentum is still there when you think about the stadium opening up, and ironic that they'll get another shot at Union in that first game in the new stadium at the Fairgrounds on May 1st. Looking forward to that. But the momentum's all there. The foundation is still there. And I think Ben just put it perfectly. It's a new blueprint in MLS, which I think is the most intriguing thing when you look at how much this league is expanding. So, I mean, this is kind of a missed opportunity. That's how I see it. It's a missed opportunity given the way everything shook out in the playoffs afterwards, with Union losing all those guys and then losing to NYCFC. I mean, look at who's in the final. It's Portland Timbers and NYCFC. It's not Sporting KC. It's not New England Revolution. It's not Seattle Sounders, who we thought might get hot in the postseason. It's NYCFC out of the Eastern Conference. So it feels like a missed opportunity, but the momentum is still very much there.
Look, I'll say this. I think when you look at these tournaments, and yeah, it's easy to say knockout play, anything can happen, this, that, and the other. I really do think if you look at American sports, the playoffs, NCAA tournament, all, like, at the end of the day, the really good teams make it pretty damn far every time. Of course, crazy stuff happens, right? You have your huge upsets where a Cinderella goes on a crazy run, or a big dog UVA losing as a number one. Yes, that stuff does happen. But if you look at the Final Four, might not be four number ones. There's going to be one or two. The other guy's usually going to be a two or a three. There's usually in the playoffs, one of the teams that gets a bye in the NFL is going to make it to the Super Bowl. Like, all that stuff kind of adds up. I think the biggest thing, it's different between Nashville and New England here, because New England, there's such a disparity in points. I think in MLS playoffs, they've got to figure out the scheduling better, because 3.5 weeks with that international break before the first playoff game for the team that gets the bye is too long. It's almost a month of not playing. And the one seeds, if you look back at what two seeds do versus what one seeds do in MLS playoffs, I know Ben's tweeted this, it's just kind of crazy. And I think it is a negative, and it has been a negative. I think it was for both Colorado and New England this year. So that being said, anything can happen in these things. Yes, I really do think the good teams win out, generally speaking, though.
And I do think as well that when you know that you're being judged in an American style of knockout tournament, that's what you're judged on too. I think that it would be very easy to apply, you know, the standards that we apply to our European teams to this Nashville team. they just don't have the same format, right? We kind of have to reassess and recalibrate our expectations and the way that we grade these scales for Nashville SC in Major League Soccer. So for me, the way I remember this team is the way they went out. And it's not fair. It's not the way it should be. It's not the way that Defender of the Year Walker Zimmerman deserves to be remembered for missing a penalty in a shootout where his team that looks like their youth program that's just getting started up, you know, a training here in Nashville. But to me, I remember that. And let's segue to this. And as we kind of look at how we remember this team in 2021, before we get to the headlines of kind of what's next. Guys, I remember the conservative draws from this season. Specifically, I remember the Chicago draw on a bad turf. It's on a football Sunday, so nobody's paying attention to it. And they go scoreless on the road to a really bad Chicago Fire team. I think of the draw against Orlando late in the season, that if you just defend a set piece in stoppage time, then you're the one hosting the Eastern Conference semifinal. And I like Nashville's chances, the way they played against Philadelphia. If that penalty shootout, even if it still gets to penalties, I like Nashville's chances handling the pressure more in their home stadium. For me, it's not just the penalty shootout the way I remember this team. On top of that, it's a lot of these draws, and I think it's how this team moves forward in the next season, saying, all right, we found a way to be more attacking-minded, but we found a way to have better offensive quality, but we still were unable to overcome being really conservative in games where you felt like you could have gotten 3 points. To me, ultimately, that's where this team could have gone from really good to potentially a championship-level team, because I would have liked their chances against either of the teams that are left as well.
I mean, bottom line for me is, I mean, this is not unexpected. I predicted Nashville to get into a shootout in every game of the postseason for a reason. I figured they would, because of the trend of this season. What, Ben, tied the MLS record for draws in one season, right? With 16.
Kind of poetic.
So, right. I mean, it's no shock here that Nashville went into a shootout. You wish they had been better prepared for it. And that adds to the missed opportunity. I had forgotten Nashville would have hosted NYC in the Eastern Conference final if they won the shootout. So you just think about that. And again, it adds to the sting a little bit if you're Nashville, but it's no surprise they got into the situation. You just wish they would have been better prepared for it. But at the end of the day, the draw at the end of regulation, a set piece goal conceded, bit of a microcosm of this season. They just couldn't pull it out in the end in a situation that we haven't seen yet from them in the MLS level, at least.
I think for me, the big takeaway and kind of the way I'll remember the season is just how much better the attack was. I mean, they had that stretch over the summer where Hani Mukhtar and Randall Ayal and CJ Sapong were just kind of dominant. You had 5-1 win against Chicago, I guess 5-2 against DC, coming back from behind in Cincinnati to win 6-3. I think even the playoff win against Orlando, where they came back from a goal down and kind of just blew them out off the field in a 3-1 win. I think, yeah, it makes the way they went out disappointing, but I think it also just shows in a small sample size, but it shows the year-over-year improvement that you expect from good teams, and I think it bodes well for their trajectory going forward. But for me, I just think there were a lot of moments in the season that were just a lot of fun, and we've seen how hard it is for expansion teams to get those moments consistently, and I think Nashville did that consistently and were just fun to watch.
Yeah, I think my takeaway is just some individual performances. I think Hani was the best player in the league this season. I don't really think it was particularly close. Walker, again, best defender. I think when you look at some of the shifts those two guys put in, same thing with Alistair Johnston. I think we saw some genuine moments where Lovitz looked like the best left back in the league. Just really, really good from a ton of people at different points in time. A ton of fun to watch. This team was a blast to watch. Was a dud every now and then, sure. Atlanta United at home was a dud. Toronto away was a dud. Yeah, there was some mixed in for sure. But a ton of fun to watch generally. And like Ben said, I think just on the trajectory to get more and more fun to watch.
You can definitely grade this team on a lot of different scales, because you can look at it and say this team probably had the best attacker and the best defender in the entire league and lost in the conference semifinals. Or you can grade it the way we started the show and say, look, this team is an expansion team 2 years ago and is already in the conversation of the perennial powers in Major League Soccer. One thing we have not touched on yet, guys, this team moving to the Western Conference, when I think of the perennial powers over the last 5 years of Major League Soccer, there's two teams that come to mind more than anyone, and probably a third as I think about it. It's Seattle and Sporting Kansas City are the main two that I think of. And the third one is Portland Timbers, who is now playing for MLS Cup as well. Those are the three teams I think of, and those are now all conference rivals of Nashville SC. I know New England just put up the best season in league history points-wise, but Ben, I mean, you're looking at a schedule that I think gets remarkably tougher given the fact that you've got longer road trips to make more consistently and you've got more consistent powers on your schedule starting next season.
I think you can look at it in a couple of ways. Yeah, like you said, I think the top teams in the West are better than the top teams in the East.
Without a doubt.
The travel schedule is going to be brutal. I think on the plus side, they're going to be on the road for about the first 2.5 months. So down the stretch, they'll be at home significantly more than they were this year. It's actually kind of the reverse of this year, where you're at home to start in a way to finish. I think the other thing, too, everybody talks about how in the East, well, you get to beat up on Cincinnati a couple times a year. In the West, at least this year, you kind of had three Cincinnatis in Dallas, Houston, and Austin. So I think as good as the top teams in the West are, I think the bottom teams in the West are probably worse than the bottom teams in the East. So there are going to be opportunities for points. I think, too, Nashville's style kind of lends itself to playing a lot of these guys in the West who will have the ball for most of the match. Seattle dominates the ball. Sporting Kansas City dominates the ball. Portland, not so much. But I think Nashville sets up well against them. And sure, I think there might be some difficulties with the travel and everything, but I don't expect a huge drop off for Nashville. I think I kind of expect him to finish kind of on the 55 point mark that they hit this year.
Well, it's going to be tough too, because for the exact reason why Nashville SC was away so much to end the season, it's so Nissan Stadium can be open. You're going to have a lot of fans. I mean, the Bowling family are season ticket holders for both. You're going to have a lot of fans making some business decisions at the end of next season, which they've never had to make before, of which kind of game do you go to, which I think a lot of people are not maybe looking forward to as much.
It'll probably come down to who's winning.
Oh, that's fair.
What is the opinion of West Coast MLS fans going to be of Nashville with the mentality Gary Smith will take on all these long road trips? Cool.
Well, I've got a kind of a side point to that. I think if you're a Nashville fan, you've got to be stoked about this, because MLS tries to put Seattle, Portland, or either of the LA teams on national broadcast as often as they can.
Yeah.
Nashville's a team who's made the MLS playoffs twice in a row in the Eastern Conference. Good team. I think you're going to see more national games. And if you're a person who thinks Hani Mukhtar got the shaft in MVP this year, more national games is going to lead towards more people talking about this team and talking about him, both good and bad. So I think that's only a good thing.
National TV loves
new stadiums. They only had one primetime game in the regular season.
Yeah, you got to imagine the first game in the nameless stadium still is going to be national TV. It has to be.
I mean, it's a playoff matchup.
Big ass soccer stadium. It has
to be. The what?
Kid Rock's big ass soccer stadium.
Oh, perfect. For some reason, I thought you said John Freeman soccer stadium is like an ode to him getting the UVA job, which we've already mentioned UVA basketball on this podcast.
We had to
throw in a John Freeman shout out there. So shout out to John Freeman if you're listening, which I know he's still a big fan. But guys, Ben, I want to kind of get your thoughts on this too, of just the headlines going into next season. We mentioned the transition to the Western Conference, transition into a beautiful new stadium, and about to turn on NSC Instagram notifications, because every time I see these pictures, it looks more and more real. And I still can't believe that a construction project in Nashville, Tennessee is ahead of schedule. Has that ever happened? I don't think so. But briefly, if you will, Ben, just run through kind of the headlines, the highlights of these roster moves as we learn who is back and who is not back for Nashville SC that we know for sure at this point.
Yeah, so I don't think there are a ton of surprises here. Probably the big one is that they have not extended Jandre Cadiz's loan or picked up his purchase option, which is reported around $3 million. So he'll be going back to Benfica, played 31 games for Nashville and scored 5 goals. I think he's a good player, but I think it would be hard to make a case that his production has justified a DP slot. So Nashville moves on from him. They've declined options on David Akam, who's the highest profile guy probably in this group, loaned out last year. really didn't make a ton of an impact in 2020 with a lot of injuries. So David Akam has his option declined, as well as Nick Hines, Tom Judge, Tor Saunders, and Matt LaGrassa, who was a mainstay for them in the USL level, but just wasn't a huge contributor in MLS. The only other name you'll see on that decline list is Brian Meredith, who was the backup goalkeeper for every game this year. His option was technically declined, but they're working on bringing him back on a new deal, as well as Jaleel Anababa and Abu Dunladi, who are free agents and have potential to come back to Nashville, but are also free to look elsewhere.
So can I briefly just say on the goalkeeper front, how close we were to Joe Willis being suspended for the second game in this team's existence, doesn't get a red card for what really should have been a red card against Atlanta United in the first game ever, and then continues to play in every single game. This is like Logan Woodside battling away any of the backup quarterbacks that walk into the room for the Tennessee Titans. And now I've got my weekly Tennessee Titans analogy in on this show. If you're playing bingo at home, when is a goalkeeper ever going to play? This we've now turned from when is someone going to start over Dave Romney to when is someone ever going to rotate out for Joe Willis?
Well, Elliot Panico had his option picked up. He was loaned out. He was the backup for all but two games last season and was loaned out to the USL Championship this year and looked really good. And everyone in the club is really high on him. I think he could come in and potentially fight for backup minutes. I think also if it's pretty close, they'll loan him out again just because he's a young keeper and minutes are valuable for his development. But I think Joe Willis is hands down the number one until proven otherwise.
I was going to say, you've got club legend Brady Scott and club legend Brian Meredith, who could have put on the shirt without ever actually playing in the shirt.
As far as guys coming back, Robert Castellanos, Cozy Donaciano, Luke Hawkinson, Alistair Johnston, Eric Miller, Alex Moyle, Dylan Nealis, Elliot Panico, and Taylor Washington all had their options picked up. So they'll all come back, and then everyone you haven't heard mentioned was already under contract. Except for Dax McCarty, who has signed a new contract for 2022 with an option for 23.
The clock has got to be ticking on Dax, right? Just real quick here. Like the guy's not going to play for, I mean, max 2 years. Is that fair?
I don't know. I mean, he'll be 35 before they open the new stadium, but he's also played significant minutes in the past 2 years.
Yeah.
He played, I think, just under 70% of potential minutes this past year. And I think was consistently one of the better players on the field for Nashville when he played. So I don't know. I mean, some guys just find ways to keep playing, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of them. But I do think Nashville are going to have to prioritize getting a high-level midfielder who's a bit younger and can kind of fill in some more minutes. Because right now, going into the season with really McCarty and Godoy and Brian Anunga as your three midfield options feels pretty risky. So I would really expect to see some moves here before the season starts.
You expect him to continue to be a cornerstone, right? Just the minutes are going to decrease, right?
You have to have a plan B who could not drop off significantly, and I don't think they have that right now.
So let's kind of transition into our final topic here on the show as we get ready for all the offseason moves, additions this team makes. The Yonder Cadiz DP spot is open at this point. So Ben, correct me if I'm wrong. You still have one big money player you could bring in the new stadium next year, correct?
Correct. I don't think that won't happen until this. I can almost guarantee that will not happen until the summer.
Okay.
Just because that's the off season for Europe and when the best players are available. So I think Nashville will probably hold on to that slot at least through the summer.
So
yeah. And if you're out there getting annoyed about that, just pump the brakes 1 second. You want to see the team maximize value, get the best deal possible. You probably watch European soccer. You know what January is like. There's no good deals to be found. So just
the other thing too is
take a breath.
Having a DP just to have a DP does nothing, because Nashville had three DPs since July last year, and I think you can argue that only one of them really performed. So I think a priority is getting Ake Loba up and running, which I think to be fair, he was always signed kind of for this coming year.
Yeah,
because Nashville knew that if they didn't sign him in the summer window, he wouldn't be available in the winter window. So they just got him in when they could. He'll adapt better. I think the priority before you even worry about adding in a third DP is making sure that Mukhtar keeps up this form and your other DP and Ake Loba performs at a DP level.
I agree. And Davey, you're talking to me there in my frustration, because I've already seen two players be bought in the summer and do basically nothing for you in the playoffs other than one Yonder Cadiz goal a year after he was supposed to originally kind of contribute to the call. So it's just going to be the same old story. But that is another podcast for another time. And on the way out, guys, the biggest need for Nashville SC is what? And on this one, Davey, we will start with you.
Well, I'll take the easy one because I've been saying it's the biggest need since before last season started. I think you need Dax McCarty's replacement. I think you need a, if not a DP level number eight, a high TAM level number eight who is going to push Dax or Anibal out of the starting lineup, depending on what the rotation is. That's my personal opinion.
Lucas?
I'm going to say DP depth across the board, all three spots, because I'll proceed that by saying Hani Mukhtar had enough production for two designated players this season. But with that said, think about what this team could have done, how much it could have been pushed over the top with more than Yonder Cadiz and Ake Loba and what they provided in those other two designated player spots. So I'm going to stick with that. I know there's other foundational pieces that need to be addressed depth-wise, but for me, I think about the top of the roster, designated player depth. If Hani Mukhtar can carry over this consistency from this year, and whether that comes from Ake Loba as he adjusts to MLS going into 2022 or whoever comes in to take that spot from Yonder Cadiz, I'm going to say DP depth, because when this team needs that last little bit of firepower, I don't think it got it this season where it thought it could get it from Ake Loba. That's why he was brought in midseason, and that didn't happen.
Ben?
Yeah, I think for me, it's attacking options off the bench. Because
the words right out of my mouth.
I think Ake Loba was basically it. Other than that, I mean, you had Abu Dunladi, who, no disrespect to him, but he's not a consistently reliable attacking option off the bench. And then after that, you're looking at Taylor Washington, Alex Mweel, and Luke Hawkinson, who are all hard workers, but I don't think any of them are really attacking substitutes. So I think whether it's guys who can start or just guys who can come in and play roles off the bench, or even if it's improvement from a guy like Rodrigo Pinheiro or Hanwal Abuana or something like that, you need guys on the bench who can come in and give an attacking spark, maybe switch formations into like a 4-2-3-1 and play wide. But I think you have to see that. You have to see some more production besides just Mukhtar, Leal, and Sapong.
You literally took the words exactly out of my mouth, because what I was going to say is, how many times did Davey and I yell at each other? In agreement, we never yell at each other unless Chelsea's been brought up. How many times do we yell at each other about Alex Mweel being the attacking option off the bench this season? No disrespect to Alex Mweel. He is the prototypical Gary Smith player. But, I mean, how many times was he chosen over Ake Loba to get you a goal? Way too many. And one is way too many. Again, this sounds really mean. And no disrespect to Alex Mweel, but guys, I mean, whether it's Hanwal Abuana, who I think was great before he got hurt early on in the season and provided you a lot of flair on the outside that you just didn't really have off the bench. I think this kind of covers the attacking midfield role, a winger role, and really a deep-lying midfield role where you kind of need an attacking option at all three of those positions. And Nashville really didn't have them at any. Because I trust Daniel Rios taking a next step forward next season and being a good secondary striker to CJ Sapong, but outside of that, you need a lot more depth off the bench in order for me to feel good about your chances of a goal down, coming back and getting something out of nothing. Because as Hani Mukhtar continues to grow and become a perennial MVP candidate, if he keeps this up next year, he's going to become the focal point of everybody knocking him down and trying to basically batter him like any star player in the midfield does for any club around Europe. It's just the role he's going to be in, so he needs help. I think that comes in depth off the bench, and we will see what moves this team makes moving forward in that department. Final thoughts, boys. Anything y'all got on the way out that we didn't get to?
Yeah, just watch out. The half-day transfer window opens on Sunday, and from everything we've heard, Nashville is going to be active. So stay tuned on Sunday morning. I think starting around 8, there should be plenty of stuff coming out.
Lovely.
Yeah, it was a fun season, guys. It really was.
It was very fun. We will have a new stadium to open up next season, of course. We will keep you updated here on the feed periodically throughout the offseason. When Arsenal starts its managerial search, I'm sure that I will want to just express my thoughts on that. So be on the lookout for that over the next couple days as well. I kid. I wish it was in the next couple days. Until then, I'm just going to be angry at Davey for the fact that Chelsea visited the Atlanta Braves this past week and the Braves can't tweet about baseball and they have random shadow figures on their website. But, oh, here's the Chelsea Lion.
Really, well, it looks like some of the Atlanta bad sports luck rubbed off on Chelsea over the last few days, because they have just been god awful, as they normally are in the month of December. So nothing surprising there. So
good little good verbal beam for you. Two really fit guys clasping hands together. One of them Georgia football, one of them Chelsea. Atlanta sports curse ending rubbed off on them. And that is how we will close this episode of the Nashville Soccer Show. Lovely. Appreciate you guys listening to the podcast. Subscribe to the show, Speedway Soccer, the Nashville Soccer Show, Zone Podcast is where you can find us every single time we are on, either on the radio or podcast only here on the 104.5 The Zone Podcast Network, 104.5thezone.com, a very easy way to keep up with the podcast. Broadway Sports Media, of course, where you can find all of the written nuggets from Ben Wright, from Chris Ivey, from the entire crew here at Speedway Soccer and on the Zone Soccer side of things. Gentlemen, it's a fun season. We embark on the offseason now. Thank you so much. And until next time, it is the Nashville Soccer Show. It's 104.5 The Zone.